Welcome, everyone. We're about to begin Be'ez Hashem Shir for Women, Shir number 55. It's brought down that a wise person is superior than a prophet, even. And everyone can attain a great degree of wisdom. A prophet sees into the future. A wise person can see the present in a very clear way. Looking back at the past is no great feat. Anyone can reflect on what happened. Being able to foretell the future is an unusual skill, or matana, nevuah, someone foresee something. But problems that are occurring now and the wisdom to assess a present situation, that is really true wisdom, and that is an achievement. And that is within our reach. We daven to Hashem to help us attain that wisdom, to help us make the most of every single moment, and to help us utilize as best as we could the present situation to serve Hashem the best that we could and to actualize our potentials in the best way that we can. Now, with the wisdom comes challenges. You know, there's more worry with the wisdom. There's more responsibility with the wisdom. And also, the fact that we cannot rely on our wisdom without Hashem putting his strength into that wisdom and giving us the guidelines on how to use it. The example being Shlomo HaMelech. The Torah says that a king cannot take too many wives or too many riches or whatever it is, because it'll lead him astray. Shlomo HaMelech had confidence because of his outstanding wisdom that he was able to withstand that. And he therefore felt that it wouldn't be a violation of the Torah's prohibition because his wisdom will not allow him to go astray. But Shlomo erred. Because the Torah laws are like the laws of nature, just like the laws of gravity. You can't throw an object into the air and then use your wisdom to defy the laws of gravity. Similarly, once the Torah states a consequence of an act, it says that you add those extra wives and that extra money, you will be swayed away. It can't be avoided. Even of the wisest of men, it cannot be avoided. So Shlomo concluded after that, that the greater the wisdom, the greater the difficulty, because a person could be misled by their wisdom. So how do you avoid that? You avoid that by asking Hashem to help you use your wisdom wisely. You say, Hashem, you gave me a seichel, you gave me a mind to use, and you want me to use it. Help me use it as a tool to serve you properly. That doesn't mean one should shun wisdom because of this fear. Of course, you need to use the wisdom right. You ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu as best as you could to help you with the wisdom and to know how to utilize it and when to let go and rely on Hashem and not rely on your wisdom. And Hashem will give everyone their siyata d'shmaya, what they need to do. If they're sincere in their request, Hashem will help them know when to use the seichel and when to let go of the seichel and use the munah pshuta that's beyond the seichel to rely on Hashem. But in matters of keeping the Torah and doing the right thing, we move aside our seichel and calculations, and we just simply, with a tamimus, with a humbleness, we do the best to serve Hashem. And Rab Nachman, he has a Torah that explains that when you trust Hashem entirely and you look only to Him for all your needs, then Hashem makes for you within you a keli, a vessel, in which you can receive His blessing. And what you need will be sent to you. Now this is a high level of bitachin. There's emuna, which is faith in our hearts and our minds, but bitachin is more like trusting in with our actions. Often, the more we trust in Hashem, the less we feel we have to take action. Now, we have faith in Hashem and trust that He will provide us with our paycheck and our food and our shelter. But the way of the world, Derech Eretz, is that we must take some action, and Hashem wants us to take action, not to sleep till noon and wait till, you know, for the car payments to fall from the sky or for the money to grow on trees. So we do go to work. Action and emunah and betochen build that keli. Again, you can't rely on the Hishtadlis, but you need to do the Hishtadlis. That becomes the Keli plus the trust. So our faith and trust helps us be at peace when someone else gets, for example, a promotion that we wanted because we trust in Hashem, who decided that that promotion was not the best thing for us right now. So we don't work too much overtime because we know that we need time for family, we need time for davening, we need time for learning, we need time for simcha. In ordinary times, we don't take extraordinary measures to make a living. We know Hashem wants us to work a reasonable amount of time and spend other times for more important things. And in general, the higher a person's emuna and betachin is, the less action they will need to receive that bracha. How do we make that internal shift? By focusing our thoughts and by talking to Hashem about it. Ask for his help. You ask Hashem, Hashem, how do I learn to trust you to send me everything I need? Help me, Hashem. I want to trust in you. I will do the shtadlus I need to do. Help me do it in the right way, not with over worry, not with over concerns, not with over efforts, but to do what I need to do, but at the same time, turn and trust in you. Encouraging friends and family to learn Emunah Betachin with you as a chabura is helpful as well. And part of it is also to look at what you already have in your life, how Hashem sustained you until this point. If you're going through a tough time, it may be easy to forget many of the needs, or if not most, that have been fulfilled in the past and are even actually being fulfilled in the present. You have, Baruch Hashem, for shelter and food and clothing and family and some friends, or at least one good friend. You have all or most of your body parts that are doing their jobs and are working, and you have a brain that's able to think and reflect. And you could ask Hashem to help you utilize the wisdom of the brain like we just discussed before. And if you consider overall in the scheme of things of what Hashem has given you through the course of your life, it'll give you the increase confidence in trusting and the ability in trusting Hashem. Even if there are bumps in the road, you will trust Hashem. So may you all be benched with a day where you can trust Hashem, believe in him, hope to him, and throw at him your problems and ask him for help in every area of your life. Now, in regard to the book Reclaiming Dignity, about the healthy aspects of tzniyus, so we started to talk about it in the last few shiurim. And part of it is the negative aspects come from feeling forced, or that it's being pushed down your throat. But in reality, when you reframe it, true freedom is when you really see the beauty of it and you, with a whole heart, embrace something that's good for you, not because other people are pushing it on you. So as an example, and Rabbi Jonathan Sacks explained this idea this way. If you have a society where people keep the law, not because they are afraid of being caught or punished, but because they learned the law, they studied it, they understand it, they internalized it, because part of who they are, they realize it's good, and they no longer have a desire to do what the law forbids. They know it's wrong, and they know it's for their own good. That's called charos or cheres. The law is engraved in your stones. Now, if people were to do this and keep the law that way, if everyone would do that, then we would live in a society where you could walk in the streets without fear. You don't need high walls. You don't need alarms to keep your home safe. You can keep your car door unlocked, and you'll see everything there when you return. And it's beautiful. But what happens in another kind of society where you need heavy police presence, constant surveillance? So they think they're free because, like in America these days, it's a free country. But is it really free when it's so free that morality is loose and crimes are committed? And it's not really freedom. It's in a way slavery. So you see here where there are good laws that are not man-made over here, but are God-made, truly God-made. And the healthy tzniyus is one of them. Not someone using it to control or because of their own mishigasin of why they want to emphasize unhealthy points of it, but because it's really, really good and true and coming from Hashem, then it's true freedom. It's free of human manipulation. It is just a simple power. You know, in the past, modest forms of dress in most cultures, in Jewish culture, was just the norm for everyone. Life was simpler, was more communal, and they were enforced, and it was embraced to be enforced. But these days, it doesn't work that way anymore. But the real truth is people also need boundaries. As much as they need love and open expression and freedom, everyone needs boundaries to survive and to thrive. And this tsnius boundary, no matter how turned off we may have been by people misusing it on us, if you look deeply into it and just look at just between you, yourself, and God and the true essence of who we are, we need boundaries. We need boundaries to be successful in life. And that is something that once we realize that the boundaries allow us to thrive in the right way, we won't be stifled by it, but it'll express true freedom. The example we give often is if you have a rose garden and you have a gate around the rose garden where the guards or the select, you know, it's being watched, that's a boundary, that's a border. If there's a boundary and there's a border, then within those walls, you could enjoy it immensely and it'll be there, it'll be preserved, and you could really enjoy it. You could take strolls there, you could have picnics there, you could have beautiful things happening there. While if you don't have that border and animals come in or thieves come in, they could destroy it. So this aspect is that the border creates the ability to thrive. And the tsnius border in the right way helps a person thrive. And that's really what it is. The idea being, in general, if people were hurt by this whole concept, by the way they were growing up, or by some teachers or educators or people looking down at them or said terrible things to a person who wasn't dressed, quote unquote, according to halacha, and said mean things and all of these types of things, you have to really sort of reshift and recognize, yes, there are man-made flaws in our society, in our culture, but you don't throw out a whole beautiful concept because of a misuse of it. It's a very common thing these days to be aware of that. We mentioned this a few times too, it's attributed to the Levi Yitzchak Obadichev, where some atheist told him that I don't believe in God, and Rabbi Levi Yitzchak answered back that the God that you don't believe in, I don't believe in that God either. In other words, we have that sort of mentality, you know, if our father was abusive, so God is abusive. If our Rebbe, that particular Rebbe, was abusive, then a God is abusive. If that particular teacher was mean and judgmental, then God is mean and judgmental. As we often have the perception of what God is based on an authority figure in our life that may have had negative ways of expressing it, and then we extrapolate that on God and on Torah. And that is the recognition of that awareness, of recognizing there's a lot of beautiful things in Torah, not man-made, purely God-made, or conveyed by people, by tzaddikim, by real tzaddikim, by real true people who don't have agendas, that are bound by their particular culture of their particular school that wants specific to be dressed this way or that way, but have a broader picture of understanding of, yes, keeping halacha within a framework, but also understanding what's halacha, what's chumrah, what's just a nice thing to do, and what's really not necessarily good for another person to do, when one needs more free expression in clothing and one needs less, and how to attribute it to each one accordingly in a healthy way, in a kosher way. There are a lot of people like that now, Baruch Hashem. We're either keeping halacha, keeping to the Torah standards the way Hashem wants it, in a non-judgmental way, understanding the differences between cultures, understanding what's the difference between a chumrah and an iser, and aligning each personality to what they really want and need. Now, there'll always be a struggle within ourselves too. Sometimes we intrinsically know we're doing something wrong and we need to correct it. And everyone knows that. And in the tsnius aspects too, we know when we cross the line, when we really cross the line. And we don't need anyone to tell us that. So the idea is to develop one's own inner conscience based on Torah values, true Torah values, that are given to us, hopefully going forward in a healthy way. And that is one of the goals of going through some of the aspects in this particular topic of these particular essays. And again, it lends credibility by the fact that the one who compiled the essays, admitted and acknowledged that she had a poor taste in her mouth regarding Tznius all through her teenage years and early 20 years because of her experience, and she wanted to rectify that. So we're dealing with a person who put it together, and people that are putting this book together that are not there for any agenda other than to really tell the truth and of what the essence of it is. And we're going to try our best, not going into every detail because it's a very elaborate and intricate book, but the overall nekudas of it that hopefully will help people with this and help their children with it. Bracha v'atzlacha.